Allah is simply the Arabic form for the Hebrew El. El, right? You know the word Beth El, Immanuel. The Hebrew and Arabic languages, of course, are sister languages. I don't think you have to worry about using the word Allah when you're speaking with your Muslim friend. It's quite legitimate to do so. Our friend's Arabic Bible, Nabil, he was here last night with us. In every Bible which Nabil reads, the Arabic Bible, you will be having as the word for God, Allah. That's the only word there is, actually, in the Arabic language for God. Therefore, I think even though some of us may have reservations about using the term Allah, I don't think we have to have these reservations. In Islam, God is the unique one, the creator, the Lord of judgment. He polarizes all of the thought in Islam. He is the sole reason for Islam's existence. This is the way that Louis Gardet begins the article Allah in the New Encyclopedia of Islam. What is our knowledge of God, or how do we get to know about God? Well, yesterday I think we were touching on this when we were speaking about ways and means in which God reveals himself or something about himself to us. In the first place, we get to know about God through his creation. We talked about the signs of God last night. Everything in nature is a sign which points to God. We experienced yesterday how history also is a way whereby mankind knows more about God. The Quran is continually stating, look around you in history, look at all those mounds, all those tells. You'll see all of those civilizations, they have been destroyed. That is because they have been disobedient to God. Or, of course, we look to a knowledge of God through revelation, namely the books of God as we have seen them throughout history. We've already pointed to several of theirs, the Torah of Moses, the Zabur, the Mizmor, the Psalms of David, and also the Injil or the Evangel of Jesus, and finally, of course, the Quran itself. All of these things, and this is absolutely fundamental to Islam, all of these things witness to the oneness or the unity of God. The prophets and the scriptures provide the necessary guidance which God wants to give mankind. Most Muslims will speak about two types of understanding God. One is called naql, N-A-Q-L, which is revelation, and the other is aql, A-Q-L, which is reason. Both are intended to help us to understand God. They offer us intimations of his relationship to the world and of himself. But for the Muslim, I think as we have heard before, Allah is essentially transcendent. We learn something about his will, but he himself remains, in Arabic vocabulary, ghaib. He remains the hidden one, the unknown one. And yet, even as the unknown one, he is never without a witness. This is the way the Muslim would describe God to us. Now, as for the Quranic testimony itself, the existence of God is simply assumed or presumed, very much the same way it is, I think, with God in the Bible. The Quran's message is first and foremost against the idols. Always, if you remember from last night, we must think in context of idolatry. Muhammad proclaiming his message against the idols. It's not coincidental, for example, that the basic Islamic creed begins with a negative. Not is there any God except the gods. Not are there any gods or spirits or powers which should be propitiated or powers which create except for the God. The Arabic word la is equal to the, how do you write that in Hebrew? I can't remember it anymore. What is it like? Lo. How do you write lo? Not is there any God except the God. The Arabic la is equal to the Hebrew lo. You know lo ami? You all remember. What is it? Is that how you spell it in Hebrew? I can't remember it anymore. It's terrible.
Lo.
It's an alu, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something like that, right? And with the... Anyway, the Arabic law equals to the Hebrew law. It can be very helpful for you who do like Hebrew. They are kindred languages, and Arabic is a little bit easier for those of you who do know some Hebrew. The question of atheism really in the Quran does not arise. There is no systematic presentation of the doctrine of God in the Quran. For the Quran is basically a proclamation, a message of guidance, as we have seen. Pre-Islam, we talked last night about the age of Jahiliya, the age of ignorance, which is characterized by the worship of many gods. At the same time, we spoke also about the recognition of the one God, Allah, as being the supreme God, and the message of Islam being essentially to deny all of the lesser deities which were recognized at that time. But even in the Quran, it's very interesting how when people become involved in serious danger, they will begin to shout the name of God. They will ask for God, to God for deliverance. But as the Quran so characteristically moves on, very much like the Bible, after the guy is freed from his danger, he just goes back to the normal life and forgets about God. There are three of the goddesses actually named within the Quran. The goddess Al-Uzza, U-Z-Z-A-H, that is probably the morning star. Al-Manat, another goddess, and also Allat, A-L-L-A-T, which is simply a feminine form of Allah. And I think we also mentioned the name of another god who was prominent at that time, but who does not enter into the Quran itself, a male god who was called Hubal. The Quran is saying, these are false gods. There is only the one God, Allah Himself. And we also mention how beliefs of the Jews and the Christians and the Hanifs began to influence the Arabs of Muhammad's time also. When you begin to try to understand who God is, probably the best way to do this is to think in terms of what the Quran calls God's beautiful names. I don't know whether you've seen some of your Muslim friends, they'll have rosaries with about 33 different beads on them, and they'll count these beads at least three times, which add up to 99. Because according to Islam, Allah is supposed to have 99 beautiful names. The names, they all come from the Quran itself, some of them also coming from the canonical traditions. In fact, they do vary a little bit, the various lists. But here is what the Quran says. Allah, there is no God except Him. His are the most beautiful names. Or another verse, Allah's are the fairest names. Invoke Him by them. If you want to pray to Allah, then you can begin to pray to Allah by also using His beautiful names. Now, what are some of the characteristics in there, some of the more beautiful names which we find in the Quran about God? The first place, God is declared to be one. The Quran says, Lo, thy Lord is surely one, Vahid. He is also described as by Muslim theologians as being one in himself, not only one in the sense that he is unique and to everything else that is external to him, but that he is a oneness in himself. The Arabic, they distinguish between Vahid and Ahad. So there is a very famous chapter in the Quran, which all of you who will become familiar with Muslims and your conversation with them will someday hear. And this is called chapter 112. And the chapter reads, Lo, He is Allah the One, Allah the Eternally Besought of All. He begetteth not, nor was begotten. That seems to just cancel out our Nicene Creed, doesn't it? And there is none comparable unto Him. The question again is, what is the meaning of begetting? What is the meaning of sonship? They ascribe as partners unto Him the jinn. These are the spirits, although He did create them, says the Quran. And they impute falsely without knowledge to God sons and daughters. Glorified be He, and highly exalted above all that they ascribe unto Him. The originator of the heavens and the earth, how can He have a child when there is for Him no consort? The Muslim presupposition here is that if you're going to have a child, if God's going to have a son, God therefore must also have a wife. How can He have a consort when He creates all things and is aware of all things? It is thoughts like this which form the basis of what Muslims call Tawheed. This word, of course, comes from the word Wahad or Ahad, which means the oneness of God. And Tawheed is actually the word which is used for Islamic theology. Islamic theology, then, is basically an understanding or a description of what the oneness of God is supposed to be all about. So you can see the written into Islam, almost, the basic antipathy towards anything which sounds like there may be a plurality connected with God. And hence, of course, the Muslim suspicion, especially of our doctrine of the Trinity. The Tawheed, then, is the science of oneness around which all Islam centers. Because of His unity and uniqueness, nothing resembles Allah. He is unique in Himself, as we have said. He is undifferentiated unity, and He is unique in relationship to others also. Okay, that is Allah as being one. Then we move on to Allah as being the creator. Chapter 13, verse 6, Allah is the creator of all things, and He is the one, the Almighty. Allah is also described as being merciful and compassionate. In fact, every chapter in the Quran, except for one, chapter 9, begins by describing God as the merciful and compassionate. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. That's the way all of the surahs or chapters in the Quran begin. The Quran continually speaks about God as being the judge. Chapter 5, is not Allah the most conclusive of all judges? And so He has a whole series of beautiful names. What gives unity then to all of these names? For at one and the same time, Allah can be described as the life giver and the slayer. He is spoken of as being the guide and the misguider. What then is the permanent characteristic or condition of all of His actions? It is namely His inscrutable will. If you want to really understand the Quran, if you want to understand the God of the Quran, you have to begin to reckon with the will of God. He is called Ar-Rabb, R-A-B-B. That's the same root, incidentally, from which the word rabbi comes from. He is called Rabb, which means Lord. Rabbi is my Lord, right? Please. Well, I think the Muslim would say what the will of God is all about, what God is all about and the will of God is all about is to be found within the Quran. Yeah.
But is that made clear in the Quran? That's my question.
Well, you have the old problems of predestination and, the problems of God's will versus human will, very, very much pronounced Quranically. You have an awful lot of the later development of Islamic theology focusing on God's will. You have some Muslims speaking about the man's free will. You have other Muslims saying that God really imposes His will upon mankind, that mankind really only appropriates actions which God actually creates for him, but by appropriating them, making them his own. So in a sense, even creation itself is very much dependent upon will. Since God alone can will, therefore God only can create, if you follow what I'm saying. It's all a little bit abstruse. But it's the sort of thing that you finally have to get into and sink your teeth in very deeply if you're really going to understand what have been basic considerations within the theology of Islam. Now, not every Muslim knows all about these things. Same thing as I'm sure you had your discussions about the will of God in Christian theology. Predestination, human obedience. In the sense then that God is Ar-Rabb, the Lord, we may say that God is merciful, but at the same time we would not necessarily say that He is merciful in all of His actions. Now, as I've already indicated in this little and my attempt to answer our brother's questions here, in Islamic theology, you have a whole development of the ideas of God which are found within the Quran itself. This, especially as Islam came into contact with Jews and Christians and all of the other philosophies and cultures of the time. And there was a genuine attempt now to synthesize various Muslim ideas. And as a result of that, there was a series of tensions which grew within the Muslim community, tensions on an ethical, a religious, and also a political level. Generally speaking, Islam thinks in terms of God as having an essence. God is a being. At the same time, he is also thought to be having attributes. Now, the Muslims themselves argued as to what the relationship of God's attributes were to his essence. For example, most Orthodox Muslims used to speak about God as having at least six eternal attributes: knowledge, power, life, will, hearing, seeing, speech, or sometimes these numbers may even vary. Some Muslim groups at the same time said, well, how can God have all of these eternal attributes when he himself is only one? And how do these eternal attributes relate to his eternal essence? Are they the same as his eternal essence, or are they different from his eternal essence? Orthodox Islam generally went the way of saying that God has this eternal essence, and imposed upon or within this eternal essence are these seven eternal attributes. Other Muslims at the same time said, well, you guys are worse than the Christians. They only talk about three eternals. You're talking about seven. And that is why, finally, one can, I think, with some justification at least, conclude that more ink has probably been spilt by Muslims over trying to define what the unity of God is all about than Christians have spilt trying to describe what the Trinity is all about. For example, I think we were talking last night. We spoke about God as having an eternal word. And this eternal word finally coming into our world of time and space in the form of a book, which we know as the Quran. And so the question really arises, what is the relationship of that Quran itself to God and to his eternity and to his uncreated character? There were some Muslims who were quarreling about the justice of God also. Some Muslims would say that it is necessary for God to do that which is best in the interest of his creation. Or you would have other Muslims would say, who are you to tell God what he can do or cannot do or should not do? You've got, I think, a bit of this in the statement of St. Paul, where St. Paul, echoing one of the prophets, said, can the pot begin to tell the potter what the potter should and should not, or can and cannot be doing? Well, in a sense, I mean, while we are saying that there may be a certain absence of justice within Islam, which incidentally other Muslims would counter by saying no such thing. God is always just, and there is really actually strong Quranic emphasis for this. On the other hand, I think at the same time, when we start disputing these things, we have to also try to understand a certain humility within the heart of the Muslim who always sees God much bigger than himself and who is not about to tell God what he can or he cannot do. There's a whole problem of anthropomorphism also within Islamic theology. For example, Muslims are telling us that God is completely different from the rest of his creation. He must be, because he is unique. But at the same time, the Quran speaks about the throne of God. God being set upon a throne. The Quran speaks about God coming. It speaks about God having a hand or a face or eyes. So the Orthodox, they have finally said, well, it is written right within the Quran that God has a face, God has eyes. Who are we to dispute these sort of things? How can we change the Quran? Some Muslims would say, oh, that's totally metaphorical language. It doesn't really mean that he has an eye or he doesn't have hands. Others would say he has these things, but he has them in a totally different way than you and I have them. So what happens then when you have a very sharp distinction between the creator and the creature then, what finally happens is that you come out with a theology which is verging on the agnostic. You really don't understand who God is. You might finally be saying, yes, God is merciful, but his mercy is quite different from the type of mercy that I also know. Generally, Orthodox Islam has gone a middle way. Quran says that God does have a face, the Quran will also the Muslim community will also agree. Yes, God does have a face. Those on the left would say, "Oh, this is metaphorical language. God really doesn't have a face." The Orthodox would say God does have a face, but in a completely different way than you and I know the word face. The Arabic description of this is actually inna kayf. The short form for he has this face without us knowing how he has this face. It's a face which is completely different from the face which you and I have. And again, this is, here we're going to get practical once more. This is, I think, a genuine clue for us when we are describing the sonship of Jesus to a Muslim. If God can have a face, if God can have eyes, is it not possible for God to have a son in ways which are different from our sons and daughters? Here I think at least are possible clues for you, using again Quranic or Islamic vocabulary, terminology, and concepts. Roughly then, our response to this. I think we have already given some rather clear indications that there are very distinct similarities between the Muslim and Christian concepts of God. And as I mentioned yesterday, and I'll mention it once more, it is extremely important that when you are dealing with Muslims, you deal with the fact that you as a Christian also believe in the unity of God. I have no problem myself in telling my Muslim friends I'm a Unitarian. Now I know that this sounds terribly heretical to so many Christians. Well, if you're a Unitarian, then you can't be a Trinitarian. Who says you can't be a Trinitarian if you are a Unitarian? Built within the term Trinity is the word unity. It is tri-unity. And it is extremely important, once more, to remind your Muslim friend time and time again that you are a believer in one God. Not too long ago, in the discussion we had in the mosque in Toronto, I'd say it was about 2 years ago, we were talking with an Arab prayer leader, an imam, a leader in the mosque, and we were discussing this whole bit about who God is. And we were emphasizing the fact that God is one, God is one, the Lord your God is one. The Psalms say that God is one. Jesus emphasizes that God is one. And after the whole thing was over, I think the prayer leader finally got the point that God was one. And he said, "This is the first time that I have ever known Christians to be worshipers of one God." That, as far as I was concerned, was a step forward. No, it wasn't the gospel yet. But it was certainly good news for him, at least I think it was. And it was certainly setting open a way where we could, I think, begin to present the good news to him a little bit more effectively than we normally could if he was thinking that we were still believing in three gods. The question, of course, arises, as it arises with James 2:19. You believe that God is one, so what? So does the devil. And of course, he shudders. So as Christians, we also believe in God's beautiful names. And for Christians, of course, the most beautiful names of God, which we want to emphasize for our Muslim friends, again, this is practical, I think, the love of God